Live from WNUR News, I'm Nick Song. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Edmondson, Chicago. It's Friday, February 11th, 2022. Tonight on WNUR News, a conversation about ethical non-monogamy, Oscar nominations are revealed, and Olympic figure skaters wow in China. Those stories and more coming up right now. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday evening. In Campus Local tonight, Multicultural Student Affairs hosted an event in alignment with Black History Month and their queer wellness series called Defining and Practicing Ethical Non-Monogamy with a Small World Collective. Reporter Justine Fisher has the story.
Northwestern's Multicultural Student Affairs hosts a quarterly queer wellness series with multiple events addressing different aspects of wellness through LGBTQIA+ creatives. This month, in solidarity with Black History Month, MSA hosted an event called Defining and Practicing Ethical Non-Monogamy by the Small World Collective. They are a Chicago-based Black, queer, and trans family that spoke to students about ethical non-monogamy, specifically through the lens of Black liberation. MSA's LGBTQIA+ graduate assistant, Gabrielle Guzman, who curates these events, spoke to me about why they reached out to Small World Collective.
I would really love it if students could learn or just like explore like what it means to be non-monogamous and what that means for them. Because I feel like non-monogamy looks and feels so differently across different races, different ethnicities, different cultures.
Guzman emphasizes that it's a discussion-based event where students are meant to learn and have conversations with an open mind.
And so it's basically going to be a discussion around like different dimensions of emotion that come up in non-monogamous relationships, and also offering space to just like define what it is to be non-monogamous. Like, what does this look like in practice? What does this mean for folks who are actively in non-monogamous relationships? And also just offering like, again, like an introduction to what that is and what that looks like, and more importantly, like what that feels like, specifically from a Black, queer, and or trans perspective.
While Small World creates these spaces, they're at their core a family. Jay Rice, a DJ, public speaker, racial equity consultant, and director of communications at Brave Space Alliance, has been married to Tori Rice for 11 years. Tori Rice is a photographer, graphic designer, and DJ. Michelle Liggett, who works for Soho House in the hospitality industry for creatives, has been in a triad with them as well for about 3.5 years. Jay, Tori, and Michelle spoke in the Black House yesterday in the family room, where students gathered on couches and tuned in through Zoom to hear from Small World. They defined non-monogamy as an umbrella term, describing different relationships, identities, and forms of love, in contrast to compulsory monogamy.
We are on a search for whatever brings us the most joy,
right,
and creating the dynamics that kind of attest to that and finding folks that align with it. Going along with Queer Wellness Week, it's just like being in tune with that wellness, the healing that we have to do, especially as Black queer folks, to learn and kind of understand ourselves and know that there is nothing wrong with us. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with the way that we choose to connect with other folks. There's nothing wrong with the way that we choose to love other folks.
In answering student questions, they spoke openly about their polysphere.
I think we like to be very truthful and honest. We have been polyamorous for 12 years, and we are still learning. We are still figuring things out. Boundaries are still changing. We're still growing and evolving. But with that being said, as cliche as it may sound, we over-communicate, even when it is uncomfortable. Even when it's painful, you have to be in that space to be able to over-communicate with your partner.
They also talked about how being Black influenced their acceptance of polyamory and how they navigated their relationships.
That is the hardest part. People of color are not given that space. Black folks are not given that space to say, hey, you're able to do whatever you want, be whoever you want, be with whoever you want. No, so this is years and years of deprogramming ourselves. To thinking that we aren't worthy for an abundance of love. Like, so it's hard, especially when you're dealing with people of color, right? You're dealing with trauma. You're talking about dating Black women who have seeing their mothers cheated on for years and their mother's mothers cheated on for years, and their idea, and when you're saying multiple partners, it's hard for them to conceptualize that as something that's ethical.
They went on to talk about the very real challenges of polyamorous families.
We are at the beginning stages of starting a family with the three of us. And one thing I always like to point out is that the legality of our relationship does not exist. If we had a child right now and someone decided to call child services because we're living in a polyamorous lifestyle, that child could be taken away from us. I could be put in jail, all sorts of stuff. So like, that is always at the forefront of our mind, is how are we logistically going to move with the family?
Ultimately, they delved into the logistics of balancing their time and lives together.
Google Calendar. If we showed y'all our Google Calendar, it would. I would spaz out.
There's a lot
of colors, a lot of things going on. But no, like realistically, and I love these questions because I like questions about the logistics of polyamory. Like no one ever asks us, you know, how much laundry there is. Like, are we
sweating?
There's a lot of laundry. You know, our finances or things like that.
From Evanston, Illinois, this is Justine Fisher, WNUR News.
Nominations for the 94th Academy Awards dropped Tuesday morning, with surprises and snubs alike. Reporter Allison Rauch spoke to Northwestern students and a professor to get their takes on the nominations and the significance of the ceremony.
And now here are the nominees.
It's awards season, and safe to say no ceremony is more highly anticipated than the Oscars. Big budget films, red carpet razzle dazzle, problematic hosts, long, long ceremonies. It's a good time. Nominations for this year dropped bright and early Tuesday morning, full of surprises and snubs alike.
I did not wake up for it because I was at 7 a.m. and I value sleep too much to do that.
I did not watch the broadcast because it was too early in the morning.
I actually kind of forgot that they were being announced.
I always wake up and watch it. It's Christmas morning.
I personally read a Vulture article many hours later. But as a cinephile myself, I rounded up a panel of some of the most movie-obsessed people I know to hear what they thought of the Academy's picks.
You know, I really badly wanted Jared Leto to get a nomination just because, I mean, we already know that the Oscars are a broken institution.
That's Aman Dada, a sophomore studying psychology and communication studies with a minor in RTBF. And don't worry, he's kind of joking. In terms of his actual picks, Dada was enthused by some and disappointed by others.
Supporting actress, we didn't see Catriona Balfe for Belfast, we didn't see Ruth Negga for Passing. We didn't see a nomination for Denis Villeneuve for Best Director, which didn't make a lot of sense to me.
But he was excited to see one movie in particular on the Best Picture list.
I adored Belfast so incredibly much. I think it was my favorite movie of the year.
Mama says if we went across the water, they wouldn't understand the way we talk.
If they can't understand you, then they're not listening.
Dada likes to discuss movies with his roommate, Nate Jayaram, a sophomore studying RTVF and pre-med.
I guess my initial reaction was elation that Jared Leto was not nominated for House of Gucci.
And like his roommate, Jayaram shared some of the same disappointments for Oscar snubs.
I really was hoping that Ruth Negga for Passing or Catriona Balfe, or Balfe, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, was going to get in Belfast. It is really disappointing to see Denis Villeneuve for not get nominated for Dune. Like, that movie was like very much his creative vision, and like, it's just like a very immaculately created movie. My favorite movie of the year was probably Dune. I just love the book. Very unrealistic that it would win, but it would be nice to see.
I've been having dreams about a girl on Arrakis. I don't know what it means. Dreams make good stories. Everything important.
However, he was excited to see Drive My Car and other less Oscar-y performances nominated.
I love that Andrew Garfield's nominated, my boy, for Tick, Tick, Boom. Cody Smith McPhee, good for him, doing like a God's work for all the quirked up, weird-looking white boys.
Speaking of quirked up white boys, there was one whose name wouldn't stop coming up.
I think The House of Gucci is a fine movie. He put his whole look, Jared Leto-y, into it.
Nobody has ever said that to me. Nobody.
That's Cedar Turner, a sophomore studying oboe performance and anthropology with a minor in German. And they're actually not joking about House of Gucci. But like Dada and Jayaram, they shared similar feelings on snubs and surprises.
I think the biggest surprise was seeing that Drive My Car got nominated for Best Picture. which I was really excited about. I would have much rather see Danai get nominated for Best Director than Paul Thomas Anderson, or like maybe another woman director. Like, I would have loved to see Maggie Gyllenhaal get nominated, but it's fine.
And rounding out my panel was Nick Davis, an associate professor of English and Gender and Sexuality Studies. He didn't have anything to say about Jared Leto. But he was excited to discuss his surprises and disappointments, especially for the more technical categories.
The editors clearly understood that Tick, Tick, Boom was a really hard movie to put together and make it feel like a musical, but also feel kind of scrappy and like the back of somebody's napkin and have all this wild energy. Sometimes it feels like those kinds of categories are just like editing goes to like the fastest paced movies and sound goes to the loudest movies. And so I get excited when we learn from the people who practice these crafts to look carefully at things that might not strike everybody in the theater.
Davis, who has actually been to the Oscars, knew a lot more about how the Academy operated than I did. So I figured it'd be worth getting a little history lesson. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences put on their first awards show in 1929, presenting winners with gold-plated statues that eventually gained the nickname Oscar. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences put on their first awards show in 1929, presenting winners with gold-plated statues that eventually gained the nickname Oscar. The ceremony was first televised in the United States in 1953, and since 1969, they've also been televised internationally. But due to declining viewership in the 2010s, the Academy set new rules, a strict 3-hour program and an earlier start time. How do the awards work? It's fairly straightforward. First, to be eligible for submission, a movie must be publicly shown for paid exhibition for at least 1 week in a commercial theater in Los Angeles County between January 1st and December 31st of a given year. Only members of the Academy can nominate and vote for candidates. The Academy itself is divided into branches of film production, and each branch votes for its corresponding category. Thus, writers nominate writers, editors nominate editors, etc. Because voting power is solely in the hands of the Academy members, there's been some criticism raised in recent years about diversity. The hashtag #OscarsSoWhite movement, started in 2015 by activist April Rain, pushed back against the Academy's crediting mostly white and male nominees, a demographic that dominates the Academy itself. Responding to this pushback, the Academy announced in 2020 that it had exceeded its goals of diversity with, quote, 45% women, 36% underrepresented ethnic/racial communities, and 49% international from 68 countries, end quote. I wanted to see what my panelists thought.
The importance of understanding that there are so many films that don't get that don't get that kind of recognition because the way that this works is so political, it becomes so muddled in what it's trying to do, which is actually just a celebration of quality movies.
We've kind of moved past the whole Oscar is so white thing to a degree, but I don't think it's ever gonna like reach like perfection or whatever.
I think it's ebbed and flowed. Like, on one hand, Moonlight won Best Picture, and then 2 years later, Green Book won, which is like an objectively terrible kind of racist movie.
So much intention was brought to making the Academy look like the world. It's still not there. I also think that lists like this wind up carrying maybe a disproportionate burden of proof for what's actually the job of the industry to be creating more opportunities for more people to have the kind of work.
So it seems like they all agree that things aren't perfect, but are trending in a somewhat positive direction. And despite the Academy's shortcomings and the pomp of the ceremony, perhaps there's still some value in watching every year. Davis had a nice thought about this.
I'm kind of a dopey person, and so it will sound dopey when I say, when I was little, I couldn't believe there was a show on TV that was full of people saying thank you.
Oh, shoot, I better wrap this up. Thank you to the Academy, my interviewees, to everyone at WNUR News, and my parents. The 94th Academy Awards will air on March 27th, 2022 on ABC. And for WNUR News, I'm Allison Rauch.
The figure skating events for the 2022 Olympics concluded this week. The world tuned in to watch Japanese legend Yuzuru Hanyu and new world champion Nathan Chen's performances. Reporter Pari Pradhan explains what the hype is all about and what makes Hanyu and Chen so special.
The 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing officially opened on February 4th and will continue on until February 20. However, one of the main attraction events finished earlier this week, figure skating. The entire world tuned in to see what new choreography the skaters would unveil, but special attention was on two male skaters, Yuzuru Hanyu and Nathan Chen. Yuzuru Hanyu is a Japanese figure skater and two-time Olympic gold medalist. Other than the Olympics, he has won four Grand Prix finals, four continents, is a six-time Japanese national champion, and much more. Over the course of his career thus far, Hanyu has broken world records 19 times, including being the first skater in history to surpass 100 points in a short program, which is the 2-minute 40-second skate that skaters do on the first day of competition, and 200 points in his free skate, which is the 4-minute 30-second long skate that occurs in the following days. These record-breaking high scores also led him to being the first ice skater to ever get over 300 points in his overall program. As you can tell by his plethora of accolades, Yuzuru Hanyu is widely regarded as one of the, if not the, best figure skaters of all time, and is a living legend. Nathan Chen, on the other hand, is an American figure skater, current undergraduate student at Yale, and now the 2022 Olympic champion. At only 22 years old, he has already won three world championships, the 2017 Four Continents, and three Grand Prix finals. Chen is often called the Quad King, referring to his almost superhuman ability to complete quadruple jumps on the ice. In figure skating, a quadruple jump refers to a jump where the skater completes four full rotations in the air. There are a variety of jumps in figure skating, each differing based on how the skater takes off. For example, a loop jump requires skaters to take off on the backward outside edge of their blade, and then land on the same foot. Other jumps have different requirements regarding their takeoff and landing positions, each with different difficulties. Nathan Chen was historically the first to land five different types of quadruple jumps in competition, and eight quad jumps overall in a single competition at the 2018 World Championships. Even though he's only 22, we can see that Chen has established himself as one of the best figure skaters in the world already. The hype surrounding Chen and Hanyu this year made men's figure skating feel like the main event of the 2022 Olympics. Of course, their respective achievements and status at the top of the world attracted the two men a lot of attention. But this attention was only magnified by the circumstances surrounding their performances this year. Ice skating fans highly anticipated Chen's short program in particular. During the 2018 Olympics, Chen severely underperformed during his short program. The Quad King suffered from multiple tumbles, causing him to rank 17th after the short program when he was considered a contender for first place. In his following free skate, however, he added an extra impromptu quad jump, which caused him to score highly enough to end up in 5th place. Many fans hoped this year's Olympics would serve as a redemption for Chen and finally get him on the Olympic podium. Hanyu's performance was highly anticipated, as he said he would be attempting a quadruple axel, a jump that has never even been tried on the Olympic stage. The quadruple axel has always been considered impossible due to its incredibly high difficulty. Here is a 2018 clip of Olympian Jason Brown explaining the axel jump.
So the axel is probably the easiest jump to recognize. It is the only jump that takes off completely forward. The other part about axel jumps are that they add another half rotation because you take off forward and we always land backwards. So if you're doing a single, it's a single and a half. Doubles, double and a half, triple, triple and a half. No one has ever yet competed with a quad axel. That would be four and a half, which would be insane, but you never know.
As Brown stated, no one had ever competed with a quad axel before. However, Hanyu decided to attempt the impossible at the Olympics this year. When the day for the short program finally rolled around, Chen ended up completing a near-perfect performance that caused him to break Hanyu's previous world record short program score of 111.82 with 113.97 points. Hanyu, however, had an unfortunate mishap where a hole in the ice caused him to miss one of his jumps. He still ended the program with an incredibly high score, but was ranked in 8th place. While fans and Hanyu himself were discouraged by the issue caused by elements out of his control, they all still looked forward to his free skate. They felt that since the gold seemed out of his reach, he had nothing to lose when attempting the quad axel. It seems that this year, Hanyu's focus was less on racking up as many points as possible and finishing with winning scores, and more on accomplishing his dreams of landing the quad axel and pushing himself past the limits of what is considered possible. When the time for the free skate came around, Hanyu was skating on an injured ankle and was unfortunately unable to land the quad axel, as he landed on his back after completing his rotations. However, it seemed that he was able to get the full 4.5 revolutions in the air that was required of the jump, making his attempt the closest anyone has ever gotten to completing a quadruple axle. This accomplishment in and of itself shows that despite already being 27 years old, which is past the age that many skaters have already retired, Hanyu continues to prove himself as a living legend. Chen's following free skate program to Elton John's Rocket Man contained 5 different quad jump combinations. He ended his free skate with 218.63 points, skyrocketing him to the top of the leaderboard and landing him an Olympic gold medal. Silver went to 18-year-old Yuma Kageyama, and bronze went to 24-year-old Shoma Uno, both of whom are rising skating powerhouses from Japan. Yuzuru Hanyu came in 4th place. Nathan Chen's victorious performances and Yuzuru Hanyu's sheer determination and boundary-bending aspirations perfectly showcase why the two are considered the best skaters in the world today. What attracts people to Hanyu and Chen and figure skating overall is not just the flashy costumes and pretty choreography, it's the way these skaters strive to achieve the impossible. I personally am grateful to get to witness Hanyu, Chen, and all the other skaters on the world stage continue to push the boundaries of human accomplishment and take the sport to new physical and artistic heights. For WNUR News, I'm Pari Pradhan.
Now for this week's edition of State of the NUnion, where we get you up to date on everything to do with Northwestern's Associated Student Government. Reporter Paz Baum provides updates this week on required COVID testing, a new peer mental health support group, and the ASG newsletter.
Welcome to State of the NUnion, your weekly ASG Senate coverage. At the Senate's first in-person meeting of the quarter, senators discussed required student COVID testing, a peer mental health support group, and the new ASG newsletter. First, an update from last week's bill that calls on the university to require all students to complete weekly COVID testing. ASG representatives scheduled a meeting to speak with the Vice President of Student Affairs, Julie Payne Kirschmeyer, about the bill. We are now one step closer to knowing if students will soon have to visit the Jacob Center once a week. As students continue to face mental health struggles at NU, the ASG Health and Wellness Committee is working to establish a mental health peer support group. We will let you know how to get involved as soon as the group is up and running. To keep up with the latest student news, sign up to receive ASG's newsletter with a link on the Northwestern ASG website. Every week, the newsletter arrives in students' inboxes with information about student shows, a summary of legislation ASG has passed, a link to a feedback form, and more. That's all for today's State of the NUnion. Check in next Friday to see what ASG has been up to between now and then. For WNUR News, I'm Paz Baum.
In the headlines today, the city of Evanston will review lifting its indoor mask mandate. This comes after Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the state will lift its indoor mask mandate on February 28th. The act does not cover Evanston, which operates an independent health agency. The city has not given an expected date for announcing its decision. Russia stands ready to invade Ukraine at any moment, according to U.S. officials today. They've urged American citizens to leave the country immediately. U.S. intelligence initially thought Russian President Vladimir Putin would wait until the end of the Winter Olympics to invade, but rising escalations point otherwise. The Pentagon have deployed another 3,000 American personnel to Poland. President Biden is expected to meet with President Putin on Saturday. Taking a look now at weather. Right now, it's 35 degrees, with overcast skies and wind speeds around 18 miles per hour. Later on tonight, you can expect light snow showers and a low of 15 degrees. Tomorrow will be slightly warmer, with a high of 21 degrees and a low of 12 degrees. You can expect partly cloudy skies in the afternoon. Sunday's high will be 20, but with a low of around 15 degrees. On Monday, it may be a little bit cloudy with partial sunshine and a high of 34 degrees early in the day, and a few more clouds with a low of 22 at night. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News and on our Instagram at WNUR News 8893. You can listen to these and other stories on the day on our Spotify, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. You can also find us on our website, WNUR.news. Our reporters for today are Justine Fisher, Allison Rauch, Pari Pradhan, and Paz Bond. Our producer today is Alex Harrison. From all of us here at WNUR News, I'm Nick Song. Catch our next news break on Monday, February 14th at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening. Now, back to scheduled programming.